Here we are with Peter Welch, Congressman Peter Welch from Vermont, one of my heroes. Peter, I want to ask you, starting with the USMCA, the new NAFTA replacement. You represent a border state. How's that going?
We don't know. A lot of these negotiations are in secret, but what we are hearing is that there's significant progress being made. But there's a number of contentious issues that remain. Labor standards, environmental provisions, these are incredibly important because if we're going to be in a trade agreement, we want it to be leveling up, not dumbing down. So they're still working on labor and environmental provisions. The data exclusivity period for new drugs, biologics, that's a big deal. In the U.S., there's a longer period of that monopoly pricing power for biologics than there is in Canada, in Mexico. And pharma is pushing hard to get a longer monopoly period, something, frankly, that I find quite objectionable. But that's under negotiation.
It's amazing how much cheaper drugs are in Canada than in the U.S. What's that about?
Well, that's true. And I don't want us entering into an agreement that gives the already monopoly pricing power that pharma seems to have a new lease on life. So that's a provision that is going to be a very, very important one for many of us. Does this protect people against price gouging by pharma? And we just don't know what the outcome is. I mean, our negotiators, the folks we have from the Ways and Means Committee, Richie Neal, they are very, very concerned about these things I just mentioned, pharma prices and the labor and environmental standards. But there's some indication that progress is being made. I know that there's a proposal to include a protection of pensions that workers have been losing here in our country as part of that bill. And I certainly have been a strong supporter of restoring pension rights to people who got ripped off when companies used the bankruptcy code to essentially escape their obligations to their own workers. So that's something that's being discussed as well. So bottom line, a lot of progress being made, but a lot of issues outstanding, and we'll see.
Let's talk the presidency for a while. Bernie Sanders, of course, a great Vermont hero, one of your predecessors in your job, and then over to the Senate. You know, how's he doing?
Well, good. You know, he had a great little outing there in Iowa with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Saw that.
Look, they had some of the biggest rallies, I guess, in Iowa. So they're doing good. But the presidential race, you know, it's a mystery to all of us. You know, you've got Warren and Sanders. You know, I can't say the standard things. Warren and Sanders trying to get the progressive votes. And then a question, would that be enough to win against Donald Trump? You've got Vice President Biden hanging in there, but not raising the money and getting the enthusiasm that some of the other candidates, including Buttigieg, are getting. And now you've got Bloomberg deciding that the field is inadequate and needs him, and he may well jump in. And I just saw that Deval Patrick, former governor of Massachusetts, may decide that he needs to be part of this process as well. So it's pretty much wide open. The bottom line for a lot of Democrats I speak to, they want our candidate to win. And the question is, who would be the best candidate? But there's going to be unity on the Democratic side because we know how absolutely essential it is that we win the presidency back.
Half the people in the United States don't vote in a presidential election. How could that be?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, it's a real challenge. A democratic country depends on democratic activism and people getting involved in the government that is there to serve them. But I don't have a quick answer. You know, I a big effort on the part on our side will be to encourage voter turnout. I do think you're going to have a bigger turnout because people are so motivated. You know, the Trump voters want to protect Trump and defend them, and a lot of those of us who are opposed to Trump, we're really energized to try to replace him. So I think you're going to get a higher than normal turnout in this next presidential election.
You got any ideas about who could run for vice president, Peter Welch?
I don't. I mean, that'll be a decision that the candidate makes.
For sure.
And, you know, it'd just be wild speculation at this point. There's plenty of people who could do it. Men and women, and the candidate will make a decision.
Yeah. Is there anything that should be changed at the way we pick a presidential candidate, particularly in the Democratic Party?
You know, there probably is, and I don't know what it would be. I think what is mystifying to everybody is how long the campaigns are and how much they cost. You know, we really have just gotten smothered. This campaign began pretty much right after the president got elected, you know, or within a year. And it's millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's kind of dismaying, I think, to everyday citizens who aren't going to start focusing on this until you get much closer to the actual vote. But it's a long, cumbersome, and expensive process. Now, you know, in the past, we've managed to elect some really, really good people and some not so good.
Peter Welch, winter's basically here. People have to pay their fuel bills. They're frightfully high. Anything we can do about that?
Well, it's really tough. You know, the low-income heating assistance program is something that Peter King, to bring him up again, and I have long been champions of, and President Trump is trying to zero out the funding for LIHEAP, as it's called, low-income heating assistance, and we're fighting to make certain it's fully funded, and it makes a huge difference. You know, it's a couple of hundred gallons of fuel oil for folks who basically don't have, they can't heat their home. We've had a good bipartisan commitment to that, and I think we'll prevail again. But it's very, very tough. And, you know, long term, we want to be building houses and apartments that are much more energy efficient. And, you know, if you get a zero emission house, you can really reduce the amount of fuel you have to use. Now, unfortunately, if you're low income, that's not the kind of house you're going to be able to afford. So I think we have to maintain that program, the low-income heating assistance program, to make certain that folks don't freeze.
Let's talk about OxyContin for a moment. You've been a champion of dealing with that terrible crisis. We see that the family that owns Oxy, the Sackler family, seems to be in chaos. Are we making any progress?
Well, definitely we're making progress. You just see the litigation where there's proposals of hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars in settlements. And you're seeing just there to be a strong consensus among our municipalities and our states to seek relief from the damage that was caused. But when you say, are we making progress, it makes me step back a bit, because bottom line here, we can't undo the extraordinary harm that's been done to our families, wonderful individuals in our communities. I mean, this was a plague that was inflicted in significant part by folks like the Sacklers, who came up with this this opioid and then falsely advertised its risk and its benefits, and made billions and billions of dollars at the expense of the ravaging of lives, families, and communities. It's just appalling.
Well, I always love talking to you, Peter Welch. I know how busy you are. And I got to tell you, just keep doing what you're doing, and I'll keep calling you and getting these insights that are so important to our listeners. Thanks
again. Well, I really, really appreciate talking with you and have an opportunity to talk to folks listening to your wonderful show.